F2. Number 29B.
That was the first thing one could sense, you see. Then, as one begins to think more about each epistle and say, now, what does really Romans mean? Oh, he's talking a lot about this faith and the set of the law and against faith and justified by faith against the law and so on. Then one went further to 1 Corinthians, also again about our faith and not the law and so on. 2 Corinthians was about the same. And I went to Galatians and suddenly said, oh, that's something very different. Galatians, oh, he is no more interested in his relationship to God. He said, the Christ is the only Christ. You just begin to sense, you see, with your spiritual sense and scientific sense, there is a break. And then in Ephesians, you just felt, oh, all he's saying is that there is the Christ is always working his fullness on you, and that's the only fullness there is, and it's working in you. And in Philippians, he said, why don't we just be happy about it and rejoice in this fullness of the Christ?
Now we are still on that chart, and I was explaining to you how that matrix unfolded by just having a discursive sense of the four, you see. Naturally, without the cultural sense of the four, we could never analyze those epistles in categories. So again, you see what we were saying at the beginning of today's class, that it is always one's consciousness that must first be cultured. If that is cultured within the four, then it can detect the four in the Bible and in the textbook. So, reading this chart, really, you can see that each epistle is, so to say, the point of intersection of two dimensions. If you take, for instance, Philippians, it's at the point of intersection of the column 2, namely of the Christ, the glory of the Christ, and with column C, namely that steadfast abiding. So what Philippians will tell us is always, you see, those the idea which is given through those two columns. That it will show that Philippians tells us that we should rejoicefully abide, you see, in the Christ translation, that the Christ is working in us from the first day until now. The Christ is working, that is the will and the doing of his good purposes. So each epistle here depicts always another standpoint, see? It always depicts another standpoint which we take in life. And through the differentiation of these standpoints, we begin to realize which fundamental propositions of life we have to tackle. We call it the latent error which is being tackled in through this study. Namely, it's always a definite proposition which is so fundamental that it concerns everybody, not just one, or not just sometimes one, but there are fundamental errors that have to be corrected by taking a scientific standpoint. And what these scientific standpoints are defined always through these 1, 2, 3, 4 in relation to A, B, C, and D. And when you consider them, you really feel that when one sees them as a whole, then there is no fundamental question about man left. That it answers, so to say, everything which we have fundamentally to know about man's Christianity. Well, that's what the chart illustrates. So really, if you have in view, so to say, in consciousness, and understanding what the world is and what the Christ is and Christianity and science is in respect to absolute Christian science and to Christian science. Therefore, you only have to know, so to say, four and four. Four, the one on the top, and four, the one on the side. So to say, you have to see those 8 points. If you have those 8 points, you see, if you see that those are the main pillars of this matrix, then you could more or less rewrite all the epistles. Then you would know what to write about in Romans. And you could do it in terms and in words which are very different than how Paul said it, because Paul had to say it to those people at his time 2,000 years ago. But the very same standpoint, the very same problem, you could rewrite in the new word, in our new language, in the language of synonymous terms, you could rewrite it if you would stick to this 1A. See? And so you could rewrite any other epistle without deviating from the principle of Christianity. Just by knowing that what has to be written is always that point of intersection between between 1, 2, 3, 4, with either A, B, C, or D. Well, that is how we use today these epistles in the practice, in life. How can we use these epistles? We can't use them in the way, in the symbolism, as Paul used them. I never have a patient that comes along and says, should I be circumcised or shouldn't I be? Or comes along and says, well, should I eat meat dedicated unto idols or shouldn't I eat meat dedicated unto idols? No, no one comes along and asks me that, you see. But that's only the symbolism of Paul. What he had to show was something else. He had to show him a principle. And so these standpoints must just be seen in their principle. Then they are applicable to everyday problems. Then we can use, say, Galatians very easily. Say, a patient comes to you and says, now, look here, I don't get along with my child. This child doesn't obey me, and I just have difficulty in educating it. And I know I always pray very much that man is divine and that man is perfect and so on, but that child just gives me hell. And I listen to all those hours in the radio where they teach us how to educate children, how they tell us what to do with children that don't behave well, and how one should handle them, you see. And so you have Galatians. You have Galatians where that patient says the counterfeit of Galatians and says, I know there is a Christ, but I listen to all the psychologists because the psychologists tell me how to deal with that child. So he has two Christs. She has accepted, that mother has accepted, say, two Christs. She has accepted the Christ of God and has accepted that through a psychological science. She can also help that child, but can also educate it. So, you can see, that one hasn't accepted, you see, A, the glory of Christ, that the Christ is the only Savior, hasn't accepted it. That's Galatians. Galatians, which says the Christ is all-sufficient, therefore accept the Christ as the only Savior. Don't rely on another Savior. Don't rely, therefore, on psychology, which anyway changes every month and changes as often as I change my shirt.
So you see how these epistles, you see, just pinpoint definite propositions. Definite propositions. Galatians is something which practically everyone has to do. That one relies on the Christ as the Savior, and besides that, so that it keeps better and that it sticks better, also a little bit on something else. A little bit on a drug, a little bit on psychology, and a little bit on psychiatry, and a little bit on astronomy, and a little bit on this, and a little bit on that. That's Galatians. Now I can realize that Galatians by just showing and asking to accept the Christ as the only Christ. Then the patient would say, well, what do you mean by that? To accept the Christ as the only Christ. Christ is for me just a term. So I would say, all right, the Christ is that wonderful Christ translation of principle, life, truth and love, soul, spirit, mind. And so I would tell that patient how to accept, you see, the divine principle as the only saving principle, as to accept divine life as the only saving life, that to accept the divine truth as the only truth, to accept love as the only saving love, to accept soul as the only saving soul, to accept spirit as the only saving spirit, and to accept mind as the only saving mind. Then I would have told exactly what Paul has taught to Galatians. And if the theologian comes along and compares what I have said and what Paul has said in Galatians, he says, I see not one word, not one thing which is equal. It's completely different. And yet it's the very same principle. Is that clear? That's how these epistles become applicable today as a principle of being. Therefore, we not only have to see the standpoint, you see, I call the standpoint that point of intersection between those two columns, you see, the point of intersection between absolute Christian science and Christian science, defining what fundamental standpoint we have to take. It's not only enough to see that, as I have shown now in Galatians, namely to accept the Christ as the only Savior. That's the standpoint. But we have also to develop that standpoint. To develop that standpoint through the seven. You see? And that gives the law, what I call the law. I somehow had to define, you see, what I called it the law of Galatians. Or we could say the law here of the Christ as the Word. And so in that way we can rewrite the law of Galatians just by taking that standpoint and elaborate it through the seven. And in this way we really get for ourselves a working basis, a general working basis, handling latent evil, so to say, fundamental latent error. We really handle in this way always the noumenon of error, not the phenomena of error, but the noumena of error. Here there are 16 noumenon of error, you see? And if we begin to practice in that way, even if we have no patience, we have those 16 noumena of error as our 16 patients. So you go home now and have at least 16 patients. And if we handle those 16 patients within us and within the world, then we establish within ourselves the true sense of man. Well, so, yes, I like to go over this chart in one further aspect again. And you will, what I say, you will have somehow in the text then at the end of the book, perhaps some a bit hidden, some rather pronounced in the text. I just want to show again really what this A, B, C, and D want to say. I said in A that what we have to do is to accept first the new faith, to accept that new gospel, to accept Christianity as what it is. But you will always see that every activity, so to say, which we do in a right way has always an effect, and the effect which you will have is that if we accept the new faith, that it always will reveal something new. So if I would have been a bit more careful, I just didn't want to make that chart too complicated, really. That's why I put it so simply. Really would show here what the word does to me. That the word, you see, the word is accepting. The word also is revelation. And what we get here is that through accepting the true word, the word reveals itself to us. So in Romans, Galatians, Colossians, and pastoral epistles, you will always find that those epistles reveal a new sense of 1, 2, 3, and 4, a new sense of it. Then, that's why it's the word, you see. Then you go to the B, to the claiming. You know, claiming has a touch of the Christ, the claiming. It's claiming is that touch of the Christ where you make that unity with God your own, you see. That's the true atonement, the true at one man. You claim it, and you will always see that something happens by basing and claiming ourselves on this unity. Namely, in those epistles, on that horizontal, you will always see that it does something in the nature of the Christ. It's the Christ, you see, B, it's the Christ. Namely, it brings always a transformation into the situation. It brings a transformation, a resurrection, and so on. You see, Christ is that which transforms, which resurrects. See, you also have to have a wide and a round sense of what the word is, and what the Christ is, and what the Christianity is, and what science is. This term Christ, you see, has so many aspects. In here, from the point of view of the level of Christian science, the Christ has the aspect of transformation, of translation, that it transforms the mortal, reforms the mortal. And so, You will notice in those epistles on the horizontal that it shows that in the measure as we claim, we really bring the Christ into action on the human plane. It begins to transform the human situation. So claiming really brings transformation. And then we go to C, and there I have just put steadfastly abiding in the new faith, just showing what we have to do. Now, this is a sense of Christianity. Christianity, which is that stillness of strength, which just rests in what it is. See, rests within what one is. It abides in what is true. But you will see in all those epistles on the horizontal that it will always show that you will gain a triumph through that attitude. Gain a triumph. Gain a big compensation. Christianity is also depicted by compensation, see, by victory, by triumph. These are terms of Christianity. In Christianity, you win your victory over. So you have here the quality of Christianity from the point of view of what we have to do, namely that steadfast abiding, showing that that brings something into action, namely the action of Christianity brings a victory. And so you have all through the victory. You have in 2 Corinthians, you know how he shows the victory, how Paul prides himself, that when he did really stick through that he will always be safe, and that he will always find a big compensation for what he has stood for. In Philippians, you know how that he shows that it brings you nearer and nearer and nearer to perfection, the power of perfectibility which he had shown that. That God is the beginning and the doing of the good pleasure, and therefore brings us near and near perfectibility. In 2 Thessalonians, you know the victory you have won. The son of perdition has gone out. You have won a victory of true manhood over the son of perdition, the man of sin. He had a victory. And in Hebrews, you see, he says, you get into the day of rest. You will sit down, you see, on the right majesty on high. You gain the victory. Can you see how these, they always have a common denominator. Either you go horizontal or you go vertical. They always have a common denominator. And they are always depicted through a sense either of the Word or the Christ of Christianity. Then in the last one, which we have taken yesterday, there you have it, really, that if we prove the living faith by living it, then what they always show is that you gain life, that you have life. That only as you live, your faith that you live, what you gain is life. Always that sense that you gain life, you just can't help noticing it when you read those epistles through, that ultimately they are always interested to show that you gain life, that you will be what you are, that you will be man eternally, which you have always been eternally. So you get the sense there of science. You see, science is, from the human point of view here, the proving of the doctrine, and what it works out is the being of the doctrine. Science is always also from depicted as being. See, the Word is seeking, Christ is finding, Christianity is using, and science is being. See, you have all sorts of shades. Just as in mind, you can't say mind is just intelligence or mind is just power. Mind is a lot more than that. Its origin, its source, its activity, its intelligence, its alive, it's the all-in-all, its power, but it's also apprehension, it's comprehension, it's the first, it's the beginning, and so on. You see the creator. Well, you have all sorts of tones of mind. And the same thing actually is true with words. The word can be expressed and defined through quite a big variation of ideas. And so the Christ, and so Christianity, and so science. Well, one in science is the being of it. And here it shows that if we prove that new faith in our life, then we gain something, namely life. So in A, B, C, and D, really, you will find always that you gain something, you see. If you accept the new faith, it will reveal to you something new. If we claim the new faith, it will transform us. If we remain steadfast in that faith, we will have victory. And if we live in that faith, we will be. We will have being. We will have life. So, you see, only when you, as you see, just these fundamental four dimensions reflecting with each one, then you really have in one little chart with just a few fundamental concepts, you really have the whole. That those 150 pages of Bible writing, just in one chart, fundamental, you see. You see what science is. It reduces the infinite to simplicity without taking away anything. Doesn't take away anything. All what it may take away and which has to be taken away is that the symbols rise. And as we rise, the symbols begin to disappear. That's all what is taken away. But that we don't mind. We don't mind if the fishes and the bananas go away as long as we have the two and two. So, I hope in this little chart, you see, I have now shown you what last Sunday I tried to, as a forecast, so to say, show you what we are going to do. And perhaps now, through this week, you have just said, oh yes, now I get hold of what system and signs really mean. So that we don't have to have a cold sense about signs, an abstract sense about system, or abstract sense about law. These are just terms which are full of warmth and round. They are round, they are tangible to consciousness, they are near to one's heart, they are just a comforter. Divine science, Mr. Sethi says, will be the comforter. So, if you take this chart, you see, you also begin to see what really in your practice is important. You see, say, only taking it as in its big outline, it shows you that if you give a treatment where you see the truth about the situation, it would tell us, well, let's see the situation not only in one aspect, but let's see through the aspect of the word, where you begin to realize the truth, then see that the truth has a Christ, namely that truth is just working in its fullness and coming in fullness to everyone, the whole situation, that it has also the aspects of Christianity, namely that the idea is established, that the true situation is established, and you can see it also in its signs, where you begin to see, and that situation is always operating in the whole of signs. Then you have only established, up to this point, you have only established in absolute Christian science the facts about the situation. Then comes what we mostly lack, namely the Christian science train of thought. Namely, we have only accepted it, we have only done the A. Then, really, we should see that this treatment now is fixed in principle and claim that and in our consciousness rest on that base and just rest on that, not go away again from it, and that even when opposing arguments come in, that we just do the C, namely steadfastly remain in it and know that has the victory within itself. Then if we really live this treatment, so to say, see, then it has the sense of being. See, that's what Moses didn't do. That's why he couldn't go into the promised land. He couldn't go into the promised land, and God told him why. He said, you know, there, when the children of Israel didn't have any water, then the Lord said to Moses, speak to this rock, and then he will give water. And Moses didn't do that. He took the rod and smote it twice. Well, it brought water, and the people were fed. It did something, but it didn't bring the promised land. He said, because you have smitten that rock and have smitten it twice, you can't enter the promised land. See, you see what I mean here? The thing is here, what the epistle tells us is through A, B, C, and D. It says, well, you touch that rock of Christ with your spiritual consciousness. You speak to it. Don't smite it. Usually in a treatment we smite the truth. We say, We establish some with all our force some truth. We declare with some might some truth. And we do that perhaps I don't know how long, and then we leave it, and then after a while we say, oh, I wonder if that was enough. Let's do it again. And we smite the rock again, you see. And smite it again. And then if one is has to live on the practice, one says, well, if I give 5 treatments, I get 5 times paid, but not only 1 treatment, I get only 1 paid. So let's give 5 treatments, every day 1, you see.